Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The Dugout. Premier League preview. Football Social Daily.
It's cup final weekend and there are two heavyweights set to slug it out on Wembley Way. Liverpool chasing four titles this season, looking to add trophy number two to their cabinet. They face a Chelsea side who are looking to avenge their final failure last season. Concern off the pitch for the Blues, but will there be celebrations on it come Saturday night? We'll look ahead to that, as well as some massive Premier League fixtures. Leeds, Everton and Burnley all play this weekend as they continue that battle to beat the drop, whilst Manchester City will look to apply further pressure to Jurgen Klopp when they travel to the capital to take on West Ham. Plus, with just a week left of the season to go, what do players actually do when that final whistle blows on the last day? Thankfully, we've got a couple of people on today's podcast who can help us find out. Welcome along to the show. This is The Dugout, the Premier League podcast featuring former top flight players. My name's Niall, and joining me today, two players who played for the South Coast's second most successful club, Francis Benali and Dean Hammond are here. Hello, chaps.
Good to see you, Niall. Yeah, that's one way of introducing it.
Sorry about that. There's only a week to go of the season, so I had to get it in there somehow. I'm running out of time here, you see. Francis, of course, a legend at St. Mary's. Dean Hammond also had success with Southampton, as well as playing for Brighton and Leicester City too. So let's get stuck straight in, because there's loads to go at on today's show. And we'll begin at the FA Cup final, which takes place on Saturday night. It is Chelsea versus Liverpool under the arch at the National Stadium. The FA Cup final 2022. Now, over history, Franny, the build-up from a fan's perspective ahead of the FA Cup final has always been an exciting one. A few nerves thrown in there as well. You've been in the process of building up to an FA Cup final when you were at Southampton. So what is that process like as a player? Are they similar feelings to what the fans get?
Yeah, I guess there is that mixture of anticipation and some nerves in there as well. You know, it's a very different occasion. There's a lot of excitement around it. You know, it's a nice position to be in, quite clearly. You know, I had it literally as I was about to retire from playing. So it seemed to have a bit more added importance for me personally at the time, because I knew it was going to be my last playing season. I knew I wouldn't really be playing in that sense, but I was part of the squad. I'd played a couple of games en route to the final, and it was nice to have played a small part. But, you know, it's such a huge occasion. I think, you know, I don't know how Dino views it, but, you know, certainly I know many, many players and supporters still view it as probably the best domestic cup competition still in the world. And, you know, it still holds a special place for me. And it's just been a shame that, you know, as a former player, you know, and Dino's been in this position at Saints as well, that, you know, we haven't been able to replicate what the Southampton 76 side did way back and put another piece of silverware on the mantelpiece. But yeah, it's an occasion. It's going to be absolutely incredible for the players, staff, all the supporters involved for both sides.
Well, you talk about the occasion, Franny, and Trevor Stephen, who you both know well, who often appears on this podcast, has mentioned before that when he was sort of growing up and during his playing days and his pomp in the 80s, FA Cup final day was, you know, almost as big as whoever won the Premier League. And it is a bit of a shame, Dean, to see that the FA Cup has kind of fallen down the pecking order in terms of importance. But there's no doubt when you get to the Wembley occasion, as these Chelsea and Liverpool players have done, they'll want to win it as much as anything else.
100% no. And like you say, I think it in the past it has fallen down, but I think there's a kind of recovery for the FA Cup. I think the excitement is coming back, definitely. The bigger teams are taking it more seriously, as you can probably see from the final being Chelsea v Liverpool. But it's such a special day, such a special occasion. And I think you ask the fans, they love it. Every football club wants a cup run, especially in the FA Cup, because it's such a special competition. You get to play at the National Stadium at Wembley, a full house. You know, not every player gets that opportunity to play at Wembley. So it's still an ambition for lots. And obviously winning a trophy is what you want to do as a player. Like I've mentioned before, that the memories, that's what you remember as a player. Those special occasions, those winning those trophies with your teammates, with the fans, the celebration, celebrating it with your family. That's what you really remember. So I think the FA Cup has made a bit of recovery in the last few years. And maybe that's due to the fact that a lot of the teams in the Premier League know they're probably not going to win the Premier League because Liverpool and Man City are so strong. So are Chelsea, are Tottenham and Arsenal. Maybe take it a little bit more seriously because that's probably the only competition they're likely to win. So there'll be huge excitement from the fans and the players for this game. And it's a massive game. This is a really, really good game. As we saw in the League Cup final, which was a great game. 0-0, but a really entertaining 0-0.
Yeah, of course, Liverpool won that game on penalties to pick up their first trophy. They're still in with a shout of four trophies. But before we do talk about the Reds, you've actually played at Wembley and won a trophy at Wembley, Dean, if I'm right in remembering. You won the EFL trophy there. What's that day like? You mentioned special memories, celebrating with fans and families and stuff. But take us through the day. You wake up, I mean, are you having hotel breakfast? You're on the bus. How big are the changing rooms? How big's the pitch? Talk us through it. What's it like?
Well, it's a brilliant occasion, like you're saying. It would start the day before when we went up with the Southampton. We won the Paints Trophy. We went up quite early the day before and stayed in the hotel overnight. And Alan Pardew was the manager at the time, wanted us to relax and actually encouraged the players to have a beer or a glass of wine just to kind of settle the nerves so that we could sleep. But the morning...
Just one.
let's put it away. Some players took the advantage of that and some didn't. But it was only one. But I think the staff had a few more than one. But the day of the game, the morning, you try to keep to a normal routine. That's encouraged from the coaching staff. That's where the coaching staff really earn their money in terms of just keeping the players relaxed, keeping the players calm. It will start with a team breakfast. You'll have a walk before you start thinking about going towards the stadium. We always used to, at Southampton, we always used to have a kind of highlights and video on the bus, probably 10, 15 minutes before we get to the ground, just showing clips of the season, goals, just to build a bit of confidence and belief. And yeah, we always had a song that would come, I can't remember the song now, but a song that would come on to try and motivate the players probably 2 or 3 minutes before we got to the ground, which made the game feel a bit familiar. But pulling up to Wembley, when we played, you know, there were so many Southampton fans. I've said it many times on different interviews, but we knew we were going to win that day. There was so many red and white everywhere for Southampton. We knew what it meant to the club. It was kind of the start of the recovery of the club when we were in League One. I think there were 60-plus thousand Southampton fans there that day. You walk into the dressing room. Special occasion for me, Percy. Never been to the new Wembley before that. Never been in the dressing rooms before that. The dressing rooms are huge. Like you say, we had the home dressing room, so we had the advantage as well. But yeah, and walking out on the pitch, it seemed huge, massive. The fans were there early, so there was an atmosphere before we even came out for the warm-up. And I must admit, the nerves hit me as I was warming up. And I didn't really ever get nervous, if I'm honest, more in the preparation and the build-up. But actually walking out for the warm-up, I got a bit of a really dry mouth and couldn't really speak, if I'm honest, which is not like me. And then you come out, it's a bit more of an occasion. The manager actually walks you out, you stand in a line, you have the national anthem, and it kind of builds up. But once a whistle goes, it's very, very different, and it just turned into a football match. But the build-up for me was always almost bigger than the game. The game just kind of took care of itself. Your instinct took over then.
I was actually in the stadium as a supporter that day, and it was just the most magical day. You know, Dino's experiences from the player's perspective, but even as a supporter, like going to Wembley, full stop, to watch your team in a cup final is just the best thing ever. And then to see Dino along with Kelvin Davis and the rest of the team lift the trophy as well, it just put the icing on top of the cake. You know, the whole occasion, the celebrations afterwards as well. It's just one of those occasions, especially when it's in a major cup competition. To see your team be there is one thing, but to see them win the event as well is just takes it again to another level.
Do you know what? I think because we're so used to watching games at Wembley on the telly, whether it be England or cup semi-finals or whatever, you actually forget how big Wembley is. You know, 90,000 seats. It doesn't get any bigger than that in terms of a football stadium. I mean, Old Trafford's a massive venue, 75,000. You can add another sort of Fratton Park on top of that, for want of a better description, you know, and you've got Wembley. It's an incredible place to play. Somewhere that Liverpool and Chelsea both know very, very well, of course, Franny. And Liverpool, they can still win four trophies this season, a quadruple. Although it's looking probably unlikely that they'll win the Premier League now with the way things have gone in recent weeks, they could also still end the season with just one trophy. Let's say if they don't win the Champions League and they lose to Chelsea here and they don't win the Premier League, that must be quite a strange feeling amongst the Liverpool players to know that with 1 week left of the domestic season, you could potentially win four trophies, or from here on in, you could potentially win nothing. It must be a strange dynamic.
It is a strange dynamic, Niall, isn't it? Quite clearly. And I genuinely believe they'll be on very much that focused approach in game-by-game scenario at the moment, as we hear managers and players talk about, and even us as pundits discussing. That will be their focus. You know, they'll be aware that there's that potential to win, you know, four, albeit unlikely, as you say. You've got to say that City, you know, certainly for me at the moment, well, best place it's for City to win and lose the Premier League for me. But, you know, it could still be an absolutely incredible season for Liverpool. But if the worst happened and it was just one trophy, that is still a possibility as well. And that's the margins when you're sort of fighting on all these fronts. And it's something that, you know, has never been done before. But if it were to be, say, a treble, for example, they would still look back on this as one of the most incredible seasons they've ever had.
Yeah, before we started recording the show, Dean, we were kind of talking about Liverpool between ourselves, and you were saying about how, you know, they could reach the, you know, 90 plus points and not win the Premier League title. We know how good Real Madrid are in European football. They could end up beating Liverpool in the Champions League final. They could lose easily to Chelsea this weekend. I mean, it's just crazy that Liverpool, one of the best sides we've seen in the Premier League probably ever, and they're just up against a Manchester City side who are equally as good, if not a tiny little bit better, and they could end a season where they've been phenomenal with just the one piece of silverware.
I mean, it would be crazy to think that happening, because we've all spoke about the quadruple and how good Liverpool are and what they're going to win for such a long period of time now. Man City are an exceptional team as well. I think Liverpool are a machine. They just know how to win. I think there's been evidence of that over the last probably 4 to 6 weeks where they've probably not been at their best, but they just find a way of winning. But Fran is touching it. At this point, you know, that they're top professionals. They've been in this situation before. They've won trophies. They've won the Premier League. They've won the Champions League. So they'll have an understanding of what it takes to win trophies. And the biggest thing is they'll expect to win the remaining competitions they're in. They'll expect to win the FA Cup. They'll expect to win the Champions League. And if I'm honest, they're realistic, but they'll still expect to win the Premier League. They're top professionals are like that. They're winners. They'll be realistic that Man City have got to slip up, but they'll still be believing. And if they did it, I mean, it would be the greatest achievement, I think, ever, really, in any sport. Because, not only for the achievement, but because of how good Man City are. But I think Man City will go on to win the Premier League. I think they've, you know, with the result last night, I think that could have been the biggest banana skin, but they dominated Wolves and performed very, very well. So they're an exceptional team, Man City. But I love watching Liverpool play. You know, I think they're a great team. They've got really good history. They've got a brilliant manager. But it will be very interesting because Real Madrid, wow, what a game that's going to be. Chelsea, in a one-off game can beat anyone. It's going to be really interesting.
I mean, we've touched upon this on the podcast before, but the fact that Liverpool have reached the Champions League final means that they would have played in, if you discount the Community Shield at the start of the season, every single match they could have possibly played in this season, they have done, which is just incredible when you think about it. They've reached the final of every competition. Obviously, there's all the league games. It's just insane. And, you know, Jurgen Klopp complaining about the fixture schedule and complaining about player welfare, and he's managed to keep his side pretty much fit the whole season. They've played every game. If they do win, though, Franny, let's say they beat Chelsea and win the FA Cup, much like you were saying a minute ago, because they're focusing on the other competitions and taking it a game at a time, I suppose they won't really have much of a chance to celebrate properly, for want of a better term. Will there be any mindset around that? Is it important to make sure you do enjoy winning trophies? Because, you know, they're the things that players want to achieve and they don't always come around regularly.
Yeah, it's going to be a weird dynamic. Let's assume that they win the trophy and they beat Chelsea. Quite clearly, they will want to celebrate, and I think they will celebrate, but I think it'll be, you know, sort of almost controlled celebrations, shall we say, for want of a better expression, because I think it's right to celebrate the success that a team and a group of people have and a club whenever they do come along, because it is so important, and it can quite clearly be few and far between. So I think it's important to celebrate those successes when they do come along, but given the scenario that they are in, they will quickly have to click their mind back into that refocusing on back to business scenario and approaching the next game and the next final very, very quickly. And I guess that's going to be the skill predominantly, and not just the players themselves, but Jurgen Klopp and his staff to manage that and how they control that as well.
I'm conscious we've spoken a lot about Liverpool and discounted Chelsea almost, Dean, but we can't do that because they've reached the final of a number of competitions under Thomas Tuchel. They, of course, won the Champions League. They lost to Leicester in last season's FA Cup final, so they want to kind of put that right. And all of the things that are going on off the field with Roman Abramovich and potential new bidders and owners coming into the club, we still don't know whether Chelsea will even be in the Premier League next season. This is a great opportunity for those players on the pitch, of which several will be moving on, as we found out in recent weeks, the likes of Rudiger, etc. It's a great chance for them to achieve something as a group, as a team, because even though perhaps they've been through adversity off the field, they've managed to continue to perform to an extent on it, and that would be a great way to mark that with an FA Cup trophy.
Totally agree. I think they have performed now. Man City and Liverpool, I think, are on the next level that Chelsea are not quite at yet. They're third in the Premier League. They're in an FA Cup final. They lost to Real Madrid, I think it was in the quarterfinals of the Champions League, that looked like they were obviously in the final and got a chance of winning it. So there's no disgrace in how they performed this year. Would they have expected to be a little bit closer to the top two, potentially? But I think they've got a real chance against Liverpool. Like you say, they'll still be hurting from that cup defeat last year to Leicester, which they would have been expected to win, and they didn't. But they won the Champions League, which was a massive achievement. But I think if you look at the Chelsea team, Mason Mount is performing brilliantly again at the moment. He's in great form. Reece James has come back in and been exceptional. Really has. He looks like, well, he is a top player, but I think he's getting better and better. And Lukaku's come back into the team. You know, Lukaku is best, let's be honest, he's unplayable. You know, he really, really is. If he's in the mood and he wants to play and he's got a point to prove and he's confident, he's very, very difficult to play against. And Chelsea have got world-class players. So I think this is going to be a really, really close game. Like we saw in the League Cup final, there's not much between the two teams, especially on a one-off game. You know, a consistent season, maybe there is. But in a one-off game, this is a flick of a coin. And I think it will be a brilliant game of football.
And I know it doesn't matter too much because players change and there's a turnover in playing staff, etc. But Chelsea are pretty good at Wembley. And I think they've been there more regularly than Liverpool. Whether that will have an impact, I'm not so sure. One nice little quip to finish on, though, is that if Reece James and Chelsea win the FA Cup this weekend and Lauren James playing for Chelsea Women win the FA Cup, it'd be the first brother and sister combo to have shared in joint FA Cup success. So that would be a nice one for the James family should that happen. But we're going to move away from the FA Cup under the arch at Wembley, and next we're going to talk about some of the big Premier League games taking place this weekend, and stress on that word big: Leeds, Everton and Burnley, all still fighting the drop. Massive games for them this weekend. We'll talk about them next.
The Dugout, Premier League preview, Football Social Daily.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The Dugout. Premier League preview. Football Social Daily.
Welcome back. This is The Dugout, the Premier League podcast from Sports Social featuring former top flight players. I've got Dean Hammond and Francis Benali alongside me. And there are some huge matches in the top flight this weekend with just a couple of weeks to go in the Premier League season 2021-22. And let's start at Elland Road, where things are not going swimmingly for Leeds United. Just their second season back in the top flight, and they are at risk of returning to the Championship. They take on a Brighton side who dispatched Manchester United in their last game. But I think Leeds is the focus here. They're in real trouble at the moment, Franny. That last run of three games against Arsenal, Manchester City, and most recently Chelsea has been absolutely devastating for them. It's seen them drop into the bottom three. However, their final two games of the season, this one coming up against Brighton at the weekend and next weekend on the final day against Brentford, seem a lot more winnable. How does Jesse Marsh go about mentally resetting his side and saying, listen, it's pretty much a two-game shootout now against Brighton and Brentford, because it was always going to be tough against Arsenal, City and Chelsea?
Yeah, you rightly say on that run of fixtures, that's just the way sometimes that the games do come up, and it certainly hasn't helped Leeds United at all, has it? You know, only that one victory in the last six Premier League games. So, you know, that wouldn't help them. I think at this stage of the season, some kind of momentum and confidence is key into turning, you know, matches into points and points that you need to survive in this sort of stage of the season. And it's quite clearly at a point now where, you know, it's got to be wins on the board. You know, there's no time for anything else but that. And even then, you wonder whether it's still within your control. And that's, I guess, the only thing that they can control and he can sort of focus his players on is to keep the mood relatively light, you know, try and keep it stress-free, but focused. You know, everyone will know the position they're in and what is required from them. So it's just trying to keep a relaxed environment, I think, around the training ground and on the match day. And then, you know, from a playing perspective, I know, you know, having been in similar positions in the past personally, that you just can't wait for the game to come round. You know, the days and the build-up to the match itself, it's a long, drawn-out process, and there's some sleepless nights there as well, realising that you're faced with the reality of being relegated. So, you know, from a playing point of view, the players will just want to get on with the game and hopefully get the result that they're going to need. But it's going to be a stressful time, but one that will be something that will have to be controlled very much by the management team.
Well, you say facing being relegated, Franny. A lot of the players that play for Leeds United are the same group that got them up from the Championship to the Premier League after 16 years away. And Leeds are a huge club in this country. I don't think anyone can deny that. They're one of the best supported, most successful sides in the top flight, let alone in English football. So how damaging will that be for them as a football club if they do get sucked back down to the second division?
Oh, it'd be such a crushing blow, won't it? You know, to rightly, as you say, the support, the size of the club historically, having come up and, you know, sort of, you would say probably more well equipped than some of the other sides that have come up. You know, you look at how well Brentford have done and what an incredible season they've had, and sort of Brighton coming up in recent years and things like that, and how well they're doing at the moment. It's one of those scenarios. It's such a tough place to come in, and if you get that lack of form, belief, results, it can quickly change and find yourself in that relegation position. And if you do go down, it, as we know, the Championship is such a hard place to get back up from. So it's going to be a crushing blow to them as a club and the players that have, you know, worked so hard to get back into the Premier League. You know, it's a reality. It's not an excuse, but injuries haven't helped them this season. And they've had the change of management as well. And Bielsa was incredible for them for so long. So, yeah, it would be a real loss, I think, for the Premier League in lots of ways if Leeds United were to go down.
Naturally, a club the size of Leeds, if they do drop, the inquiries will start. And as Franny rightly says, Dean, you know, you look at the change of manager, you look at the fact they've had injuries. People will be looking for blame if Leeds get relegated. So where should they be looking? Is there any blame to place? What's your take?
Well, I think it's always a collective blame. You know, everyone's responsible. You have to look at it like that, from players to owners to managers to everyone involved. There's a collective, I wouldn't say blame, a collective responsibility. One thing I would say, that if Leeds do go down, they're in a better position financially and structure-wise than they were when they previously went down. So I think they've got a better chance of bouncing back, but they may not go down. But I think if you look at it, maybe due to what Bielsa did for the football club, I think they were just a little bit too loyal to him. You know, I think they waited a little bit too long. If they'd acted 4 to 6 weeks before they did, maybe they wouldn't be in this position. They may have, I don't know, 4 or 5 more points than they had, and then they would be in a stronger position to get themselves out of trouble, because the last 3 results have been difficult for them. But if you look at the 5 before that, they were five unbeaten, 4 wins and a draw. So when they play the teams around them of late, they've performed very, very well and picked up points. So they're definitely still in this. They've definitely got a chance. Has there been the injuries Franny touched on? Always difficult. Again, does that come down to the training regime Bielsa had? Then Marsh comes in and changes that. That can cause injuries. Whether it's as tough as not, a change in training can cause injuries. So I think it's a collective responsibility, and it's that second season syndrome, isn't it? It's how many teams that get promoted have this? You know, we looked at Sheffield United when they went down. Their first season, they were brilliant. I think they finished in the top 10 and then got relegated the season after because they couldn't win games. So it's been difficult for Leeds, but, you know, with Brighton and Brentford left, they've still got a chance. They really have, and I think there'll be a few twists and turns yet. But, yeah, I think if you're looking for a reason, I think they just, due to loyalty to Bielsa, I think they acted probably just 4 or 5 weeks too late.
Obviously, the players are desperate for Leeds to stay in the Premier League. Is that spilling over, Dino, into the way they're playing? Have they shot themselves in the foot a little bit? Because with the recent game against Chelsea, they had Dan James sent off. Before that, against Arsenal, they had Luke Ayling sent off. They're not helping themselves if they're playing with a limited number of players due to suspensions and red cards. And I think with some of the yellows they picked up against Chelsea, that means it's 100 bookings or 100 cards in total for them in a Premier League season, which is the most ever of any team that have ever played Premier League football since 92. So do you think that played a part?
100%, because if you've got suspensions, you can't pick your best team. It's like injuries. If the players are not available, it's very difficult you can't pick your best team. So then consistency of performance becomes difficult. Building relationship with players, your partnerships, centre-halves, central midfield players, strikers, whatever formation you play can be very, very difficult. And yeah, I think of late, you know, the Luke Ayling challenge, I like Luke Ayling. I think he's a top professional and been a brilliant player for Leeds. I think that's just a rush of blood and some passion, really showing some passion there. But, you know, he didn't need to do it. Dan James last night doesn't really make tackles like that. You know, that's not in his makeup. And where that comes from is that instructions from the manager? Is that getting caught up in the Ellen Road atmosphere with the fans? Is it disappointment from being a goal down so early? So there's many, many reasons during a game why things happen. But, you know, the suspensions definitely wouldn't have helped. And also, I think, you know, you look at the bookings you said. No, I think over 100 bookings you said. I think that probably came down to the way Bielsa played. There's lots of situations where players have been in one-on-one situations and would have got beaten, so would have pulled a player back, would have taken him down, which causes more bookings. And obviously fatigue, because of the way they played at such a high tempo. Later on in the game, you will pick up big bookings when you're tired. So it's definitely not helped them, though.
Yeah, I mean, man-marking was how Bielsa played the game, wasn't it? So you're right with those one-on-one duels, and maybe that it does lend itself to more bookings. But let's talk about Brighton, their opponents, who absolutely demolished Manchester United at home, Franny, in their last game. They could finish 10th, they could still finish in the top half, which would be their best ever Premier League campaign. I mean, huge credit must go to Graham Potter. Do you think there will be any concerns? I know he signed a new deal recently, or at least in the last 18 months, but do you think there might be any issues amongst the Brighton fans about him possibly being poached by another team?
I guess they are quietly a little bit nervous, maybe, that, you know, when you see your team being successful and club doing well, that it's quite often then going to attract the attentions of others, for not just the players, but the management as well. And he's been linked with various roles at certain stages during the season, hasn't he? And quite clearly has done such an incredible job at Brighton. But, you know, I just get a feel that certainly at this moment in time that, you know, Graham seems to be the sort of personality and character. And I played with him at Saints for a while when we were still playing. And, you know, he's a loyal guy. And, you know, if he's signed a new deal, then I certainly see no reason why he would want to be changing at this moment in time. But this is football, as we know, and there's some, you know, strange things that happen at times. And, you know, quite often if there's a package on the table for either the club and or the individual involved, then, you know, quite often, the, you know, the money can talk. So, you know, I would never be surprised in anything in football, but, you know, nowadays, to be honest. But my gut feel is that he'd like to continue the work that he's been doing so well up till now.
Before we move on to talk about Everton, Dean, just quickly on your old team, Brighton, is it fundamentally a different club to the one you played for? How different is it from the days when you were strapping that armband on and walking out?
Well, when I was first there, Noel, it's completely different. You know, no stadium, no training ground, no money to invest in players, no canteen. Got given two or three kits.
Got to make sure there's a canteen.
Yeah, well, you know, two or three kits at the beginning of the season, and that was your lot. So you had to look after it. No kit man to wash. And obviously now it's a Premier League football club, and the training facilities, they've just improved again, the training facilities on the women's side as well. I go down there regularly. My son's in the academy, so I'm down there regularly. It's unbelievable. The stadium's brilliant, and it's just a really good football club, and it's run really, really well. The academy's good there now. They're actually starting to bring homegrown players through again that are getting into the first team, so there's a pathway as well, and there looks like there's a some business sense as well from the football club. They understand what sort of football club they are. Are they ever going to compete at the top? Potentially not, but they're progressing. You look at them, they're always progressing as a football club, and they seem to be making, which probably what a lot of football clubs don't do, good decisions. And that comes with signings, recruitment, manager. You mentioned Graham Potter. I think he's done a great job. He really, really has. And it's a brilliant football club. It is. Where they can go from here now is really difficult, because where do you go? I mean, what are they, ninth in the Premier League? A cup run, winning a trophy would be fantastic for them. But yeah, I think I agree with Franny. Graham Potter, I don't think he will go anywhere, because he's allowed to manage the football club and he has a big influence. I think even from his point of view now, that he can maybe put a little bit more pressure on Brighton to just maybe invest a little bit more money, because it's so hard to do. But I think if they could get that striker in that could get him 15 plus goals, they could push the top eight potentially, because they play some brilliant stuff.
Yeah, they do. And you know what? I think you're right with Graham Potter. He's not just a first team manager in the sense of coaching the players. He does feel like he has control over a lot of things in that football club, which is obviously testament to the way that Brighton have allowed him to do that. And looks like they could reap their rewards this season. They've got a tricky game, though, against Leeds this weekend. And you spoke about making good decisions. One club you arguably haven't this season is Everton Football Club. They're at Goodison Park. They are out of the bottom three at the moment. They've enjoyed sort of a mini resurgence under Frank Lampard, but the job is still not done in terms of securing Premier League status for next season. They welcome a Brentford side who seem to have done just that in their first season in the top flight for a number of years. Do you think an Everton victory at Goodison Park over Brentford, Franny, this weekend, if it happens, will be enough to secure the Toffees' survival? Or do you think we'll be going down to the final stages of the season?
I agree with Dino what he said a little while ago, that I think there's still some real twists and turns to be had, you know, quite potentially going down to the last day of the season. You know, it's great from us observing, if you're not involved with one of the clubs, certainly that are in the relegation scrap, then, you know, the interest at the top end of the table, the title winners, the chase for the top four and Champions League football, but also the relegation scrap. And I think it could go literally to the wire. I think having two home games could potentially be the big benefit for somebody like Everton, and how they've done a little bit recently, and showing how, you know, that support that they do get from the home crowd and what a difference that can make to them as well, could just sort of sway it in their favour a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, the difference at the moment is 2 points. Just to quickly run through the bottom of the table, Everton 16th on 36, 17th is Burnley on 34, level on points with Leeds, albeit Burnley have a game in hand. We'll talk about their match with Tottenham this weekend in a second. So the bottom three, Leeds in 18th, that's the only real position you need to worry about, because Watford and Norwich in 19th and 20th respectively have already been relegated to the Championship. Now, Everton's last game was midweek against Watford. That was a goalless draw. I just wonder whether they'll consider that a missed opportunity to pick up 3 points and kind of extend that gap even further, because as we say, it is only 2 points at the time of recording the show. What's interesting for me though, Dean, is that the Everton-Brentford game's a 4:30 kickoff this weekend, whilst the Leeds game against Brighton is a 2:00 kickoff. So Everton won't be kicking off until just after the Leeds game is finished. Do you think the players and Frank Lampard will be watching that one on the iPads, on their phones? If so, is that a bad thing for them to do? Do they only need to focus on what's in front of them? Or will they not be able to help themselves but try and find a TV somewhere in the stadium and crowd around and have a watch?
I don't think they'll be able to help themselves, 100%. I mean, nowadays, you look at it, most teams now, especially at the top level, get together before a long time before the game starts. There'll be pre-match meals, there'll be TVs everywhere. There's TVs in the dressing rooms now, so you won't be able to get away from it. They'll be watching the game live, and it's a huge game for both clubs. You know, like you say, it's only a 2 points difference. So if Leeds win that game, suddenly Everton are, well, Burnley will be back in, I suppose, depending on their result, but Everton could be really drawn back into it, and it puts extra pressure on the game. But also on the flip side, if Leeds don't win, I mean, what inspiration and motivation that gives to the Everton players. Not that they need any more. They're playing. I was looking at it, you know, when you go back a few weeks now, and if you'd said to Frank Lampard and the Everton players after they lost in the FA Cup to Crystal Palace, then they lost to West Ham, then they lost away to Burnley, if you could put them in this position with two home games now, with Brentford and Palace, to stay into the Premier League, they would have snapped your hand off. So they've got a great opportunity at Goodison Park, because the results have been good of late. You know, they're picking up points, they look better, they've got more legs in the team, so there's more energy in them. It looks like Frank Lampard has kind of picked his team now and stuck with them, so there's a relationship and an understanding between the players. So yeah, but in answer to your questions, 100% they'll be watching that game, and I would have been doing the same thing. Even if you didn't want to, you just wouldn't be able to not watch it, honestly. Especially if Leeds are losing.
Yeah, I've been on the pitch as a player on the final day of the season. You know, and even during the game itself, getting updates from the supporters.
Yeah, you got a geezer with a... There's always one fella with a radio, isn't there, Franny, going, "Oh, the score's in the other games."
That's right. It was exactly that. Was it a throw-in or a breaking play, whether it was an injury or something like that? There was always a moment where the supporters would be telling you exactly what was going on elsewhere. So, yeah, most definitely the players will be following other games, but their supporters will be closely tuning into other things going on as well.
Well, those Everton supporters have been in fine voice in the recent matches in the Premier League. They've given Lampard's side a lift. They'll need to do so again at Goodison Park this weekend, as Brentford are the visitors. Now, Tottenham against Burnley is another huge game. Of course, Spurs face Arsenal on Thursday night. We're actually recording this week's episode of The Dugout just before kickoff in that massive North London derby. Antonio Conte's already said it's win or bust for Tottenham against Arsenal in that game on Thursday. I suppose that dictates how things will go for them against Burnley, Dean, this weekend. We know that Burnley have got a couple of days to prepare. Tottenham, not so much, because they've got that huge North London derby. So, depending on how that one goes on Thursday, could change the complexion of this game with Burnley, which might hamper or suit Burnley, depending on the way things go.
100%. You know, if Tottenham don't win tonight, it's going to be a huge ask for them to get into the Champions League. So it will affect the Spurs-Burnley game, in Burnley's favour, definitely. But also, you have to look at it, you know, Conte's a brilliant manager. He's not just going to let Tottenham turn up and not care about a game, whatever position they're in. He's a winner. You've seen that from him. He takes full responsibility. I think it was from the previous game where Burnley played Spurs, when he came out and done the interview and said he wasn't doing enough and maybe it was time that, for him to walk away and he wasn't earning his money. So, you know, there's going to be some emotion from that as well, that he'll want to beat Burnley. The game tonight against Arsenal is intriguing. I can't wait to watch that, to be honest, because that could go either way and I think there'll be goals in that. But that's good for Burnley as well, because Tottenham are going to have to put so much effort into that tonight, because it's they've got to win. They have to win. They have to beat Arsenal, and that's going to be a big ask because Arsenal are a decent team as well. So, you know, Burnley have, again, have put a really good run of results together and looked like a good team and kind of taken the shackles off a bit and pulled some results out. What is it? 4 wins and one draw in the last 6, only losing to Aston Villa in their last game. So, again, we've said it. This will go, in my opinion, this will go down to the last day of the season, and there will be the fans in the stadiums, on the radios, fans cheering, scores going on. It will be really exciting, I think.
And we don't want any jokes about this because we've had enough since he took over from Sean Dyche, but Michael Jackson is the interim manager. And he's won the April Manager of the Month award. At the time, Franny, we were all stunned that Burnley decided to pull the trigger on Sean Dyche and say, thanks very much, Dyche. After 9.5 years, your time's up, out the door you go, with, you know, not really even a send-off message to say thanks for your service. It was just, we've changed manager. It was a very cold, almost calculated statement from the club. And yet in comes this interim manager, Mike Jackson, and as I say, wins April Manager of the Month award. I think 30% of the points they've picked up this season came through the month of April when he took charge. At the time, as I say, we're all shocked about Dyche's departure, but if he keeps them up, it looks like an inspired decision all of a sudden.
Well, if they do stay up, then quite clearly they will view it as the correct decision. And I, along with a huge number of others, as you just touched on, thought it was the wrong decision to make for Burnley, and letting Sean Dyche go at that stage. But quite clearly, Mike Jackson has had some kind of effect on the side and ultimately results, which has given them a chance, I think. They've always been known and renowned for that fighting spirit, and I think that's been a big part still of what will potentially be an incredible survival run. And a late one as well. You quite look at sort of how you can write teams off at certain stages of the season, and you know, Burnley were probably in that bracket for a while, but they've certainly shown that desire, commitment, everything that you need to do to have a chance of staying up. But they're, you know, maybe playing that little bit more football at times as well, and that's they've looked quite good and strong on occasion. So yeah, you know, credit would have to go down to, you know, maybe the change that has been made, but it certainly at the time didn't sit comfortably with me, and maybe as an outsider still doesn't to a degree in the way that that football operates sometimes. But we've seen it before. I'm sure it won't be the last occasion as well, and we're just going to see if that roll of the dice is going to pay off for Burnley.
Yeah, Spurs-Burnley, one of a number of games taking place on Sunday. Villa, Crystal Palace, Watford, Leicester, Wolves, Norwich also happening, but so too is West Ham versus Manchester City. And we've already touched upon City. They were absolutely dominant against Wolves, Dean. De Bruyne was sensational. Erling Haaland's on his way, and I think De Bruyne kind of touched upon that with the Haaland celebration for one of his goals. But West Ham, they've had a decent season. They've obviously, kind of out of the running for Champions League now. They're out of the Europa League, which would be disappointing. Do you think they can cause an upset at home at the London Stadium? Because the fans have been given plenty to be grateful for this season.
Definitely. No, I think they've beaten Chelsea at home this season. They've beaten Liverpool at home this season. So they're definitely capable. They're competitive against everyone. They've shown that. I think the distraction of the Europa Cup has seen that the league form has dropped off, but now that's over, they'll want to finish the season really, really strong. They want to get back into Europe because of the journey they've had this year with the Europa Cup, like I say. And they're a good team. They've got some good players, and they're good at home. So, but they are playing Manchester City, who are exceptional. And Kevin De Bruyne last night, I mean, unbelievable. A hat-trick, or it was 4 goals, hat-trick he scored last night, 3 with his left foot. What a player. I mean, what a player. The one thing that I noticed and probably doesn't get appreciation from is his movement off the ball. You know, if you look at all the goals, when he his first pass, and then he's gone. He doesn't wait. He doesn't hesitate. He just goes. He makes that run, whether that's an unselfish run or for him to get the ball again. Luckily, last night, he was getting the ball again and scoring goals. But he's, I mean, technically, he's brilliant. He's got to be the best, probably the best player in the Premier League at the moment, probably the best player in Europe. And with Haaland coming, I mean, the amount of goals he's going to score potentially, always difficult to tell, but the pedigree he's got and the player he is going to make Man City strong. So, look, is this going to be difficult for West Ham? Have they got a chance? Yes, but do I see them getting anything from Man City? In all honesty, no, just because of the position Man City are in, and they'll want to win the Premier League.
Yeah, and obviously with Liverpool playing in the FA Cup against Chelsea, it's a chance for Manchester City to extend that gap at the top of the Premier League table. Agree with you about De Bruyne. It's the way he strikes the ball for me, even with his left foot, which is considered his weaker foot. He just hits the ball so true. And, you know, the way that the ball just rattles in off the net when he hits them, it's just no goalkeeper's getting anywhere near that. If he gets a clean connection, some of the strikes he can hit reminds me of like Gerrard or Shearer when they used to get their foot around the ball and get a good connection. There's just no way you're stopping that flying into the back of the net.
I've seen Dino strike a few like that as well.
I'm not sure about that, friend. It might have been in training, not in game.
You won't even go there about my run.
Yeah, if you pull over in the M27, you might find a few balls in the hedges.
you're right. I used to think very true, but they just kept on going, I think.
Let's talk about Manchester City. And Franny, someone who you'll appreciate is Mark Noble, of course, who's only ever played for West Ham. It'll be his last home game. Shares something in common for you. There's not many one club men around anymore, but what a great career he's had, and he'll like to sign off at London Stadium with a victory.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, what a career. And you, as you rightly say, something that is very rare and uncommon now in the modern game. He's been a wonderful player and servant to the club, and it's going to be a big step for him. You know, I haven't seen anything publicly, to be honest. Maybe you guys have, but I'm not sure if there's anything about his future at this stage. But it's going to be a big decision for him. It is for any player coming to the end of a time at either one club or their career as a whole. And he's going to be, he probably would have been thinking for some time now about all his options, his decisions and what he wants to do in the future, and maybe whether he continues to play. But yeah, he's been an absolutely outstanding player for them. And you know, when you see, for me, it's not just the playing aspect of it. And Dino would have appreciated and been a big part of this as a captain in your time as well, mate. But it's quite often the personality and the character of the people as well off the pitch. Not just what they do on the training ground or in games. You know, when you're seeing things about him like brushing dressing rooms out and things like that, and those sort of standards and, you know, qualities of him as a person, you know, go a long way in the stuff they do in the community. So he's certainly, you know, a good person by the looks of it, as well as a good footballer. And it'd be somebody that would be missed at the club if he were to move on.
I think it's a really interesting debate, which we won't get into now. But if you think of someone like Mark Noble, he for me is one of only a handful of players left who straddled an era of football being what it was before and entering this new contemporary era where social media has become a thing. The broadcasting rights have gone through the roof. The other one that I can think of off the top of my head would be James Milner, who started kind of at a similar time. So it's like Noble and Milner kind of experienced Premier League football or top flight football as it was kind of before the explosion of broadcasting rights, and whether that will change and we'll see players akin to those two in the future, who knows? Maybe we will see some old school players. But I do think that this kind of the end of an era ushering out not just at West Ham but just in the game in general. And his final home game, Mark Noble, for West Ham United will be against Manchester City this weekend. So as he has his eyes on what he does next, what do players actually do at the end of the season? We're going to take a quick break and then we'll try and find out from Franny and Dean next.
The Dugout Premier League Preview, Football Social Daily.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun: Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere, and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
The Dugout Premier League Preview,
Football Social Daily.
Welcome back. Final part of today's episode of The Dugout. Just 2 weeks to go until the end of the Premier League season. And I'm sure many football players will already be thinking about the summer. There's often that saying, isn't there, that the players are already on the beach or they've got their sandals on or they're already thinking about their holidays. I wanted to know what the end of the season actually looks like and feels like for a player. So we'll come to you first, Dean. Is it true? Are holidays already booked at this stage? Come on, let us into the secrets.
You know what, Noel? It all depends on what situation you're in and what division you're in as well. If you're, like, you're in the Football League, obviously you have the playoff situation. You don't know whether you're going to be around there. It would never be the player booking the holidays. It would definitely be the wife that would probably have it booked since Christmas or be nagging yourself to book a holiday for the summer. But it also depends on what situation and definitely. But, you know, how do you feel at the end of the season? Tired. You're definitely tired. You know, you're definitely drained. It's an intense season. You're fatigued. But the worst bit for me at the end of the season was always that the season would finish and then you'd be in for 2 or 3 days. I don't know what it was like for Franny, but we'd always be in for 2 or 3 days with some testing, some information on what's needed to do over the summer, the meetings with the manager, the meeting with the coach, the meeting with the strength and conditioning coach. And you've almost lost focus at that point of view. You just want to completely switch off and it kind of just drags out. You're in at the training ground for a few days and the season's finished. So it all depends on where you're at, you know. Being in the playoffs is really exciting, to be honest. I enjoyed it. I was only in the playoffs once when I went back to Brighton in the Championship, and we got to the playoffs, and that was an exciting time. There's still a buzz around there, so you get re-energized for that. But holiday wise, yeah, it'd be more my wife nagging me, going, well, "When are we going to book the holiday? When are we going to book the holiday?" So yeah, it's an interesting.
What's the go-to destination, Dino? What's your favourite?
Portugal was always for me. Portugal. Yeah, I used to love Portugal, especially with young kids. You know, the flight's only a few hours. Weather's pretty reliable. So, yeah, we've been to Portugal many, many times. But, yeah, we used to try and get away as a couple as well. So Mexico as well, which was quite nice, I must admit.
I know every player's different, Franny, but can players truly switch off? You know, we mentioned Mark Noble before the break there, and, you know, there's questions as to whether he might play again or completely retire. If he does completely retire, he doesn't have to worry about anything. For example, having a few too many pasties during the summer holidays or a few too many pints when he comes back for pre-season. So with that in mind, can players actually truly switch off? I know pre-season's a time to kind of forget about football and relax and chill out, but I suppose there's always that little seed in your mind where you're thinking, okay, I can't be too off it when I get back for pre-season because I'm giving myself more work to do.
Yeah, I guess each individual, every player, every club will have different ways of doing things. Speaking personally, I quite agree with Dino. You know, you needed that physical and mental switch off. And, you know, it's a long draining season, even from a down, you know, and we know the riches that are there financially for players nowadays. But, you know, you're still effectively, even when there's days off or a little break, you're still on call to the football club almost 24/7. And arrangements can change day to day. You know, you might make plans with your family for what you think is going to be a day off or a structured day off. And that could just change at a minute's notice. And all of a sudden that throws your family plans into chaos. And I'm not saying that happens the end of a season, but the end of the season is a key time for everyone involved at a football club. From a playing perspective, I was able to go away, switch off, enjoy not thinking about training and playing and what you eat for a period of time. But I would actually pack training kit, you know, and my era was probably different to Dino's. But, you know, we'd have a date when we'd finish, a date when we'd be rocking back up for pre-season. Anything in between was almost your own time. But it's not quite as relaxed as that now, probably. But I used to take training kit away with me on any holidays we used to go on as a family. And I'd do my own mini pre-season, if you like, before we came back collectively. So I'd want to sort of be out of the front, trying to impress from a fitness perspective to get my face in front of the manager's thoughts for a starting lineup in the new season.
Yeah, I suppose some people dread pre-season and other players actually quite look forward to it because, you know, I hear similar things from musicians who kind of, when they come to the end of a tour, they're like, oh, I can't wait to get home. And then after a month of not playing any live music. They're just itching to get back out there again. So I wonder if there are similar feelings amongst footballers. But do you think generally it's harder now to relax for players, Dean, than it was previously, just because, you know, even if you are getting off to the Maldives and hiding away in a beach hut somewhere a 1,000 miles away from anyone you ever knew, there's always going to be someone, there's always going to be a Leicester fan or a Brighton fan or a Southampton fan just by chance walking along the beach saying, oh, look, there's Dean Hammond. We'll get the camera out and films. You know, it's almost harder now than it ever has been to truly kind of step back from the spotlight.
It's so true, Noel. I mean, Franny's just touching it. You know, the financial reward for the players now is massive, and that's part of the business. But I don't envy them. I really don't. You know, there's no privacy, especially the top players. There's no privacy for them at all. Even on the holidays and breaks, you know, they'll go away. You've had it before. I'm probably similar, and Franny is similar, that I'm always trying to be polite to people, speak to everyone. I think that's good to do, but it can become a task sometimes when you're just trying to have that family with you, that meal with your family, especially when you've got your young children. So it can be difficult for the players, and obviously the younger players as well, that actually want to let their hairs down and go and have some fun. You know, some of these players are still so young and don't have the responsibilities of a family, so they want to go away and have a few beers and have a laugh with their mates. And to be honest, it's not possible anymore, because everyone seems to be looking for a story and waiting for someone to slip up. And yeah, quite grateful there wasn't cameras around when I'm younger, to be honest. But no, it's part and parcel of being a footballer now, which is unfortunate. But that's what it is. That's what comes with the territory now. And some people say that's why they get rewarded so well financially. But it's difficult. It's really, really difficult for the players, because I agree with Franny, you just need to switch off, like mentally more than anything. Physically, you can get past that in a couple of weeks. But mentally, just to completely switch off and not worry about that expectation of trying to win a game, of trying to get into the team, of trying to remain fit, to trying to always eat the right thing, to get to bed on time, to be the best person or player you possibly can. That's the biggest thing for me, just to sit down and relax.
What was the longest, Dino, that you went without actually physically doing any kind of training? From, say, playing the last game to starting some sort of activity again?
Well, I was probably similar to you, Franny. Because I love my exercise, I found it hard to stop. So, you know, it was a chore for me to stop, to be honest. But I used to, through advice from obviously fitness coaches, to be able to then last the season coming through and not get injuries in pre-season, I used to probably try and take 2 weeks off, 2 weeks of nothing. But it was never nothing. It was always I'd have a game of tennis or I'd go and play football with my mates. But I mean intense running or training or weights training, I'd probably for 2 weeks. And then I'd be, like Noel said there, I'd be eager to get back. I couldn't wait. Two, 3 weeks is enough for me.
That's the mental side of it though, isn't it, Dino? Because we always talk about the physical side and, you know, you've got to be doing some exercise to keep your body ticking over. But, you know, the mental side of things is sometimes you just have to be doing something. I'm certainly one of those people that even if I go away on a relaxing holiday, by 3 or 4 days in, okay, I'm sick of sitting on the beach by the pool doing nothing. I need to get up and do something. Let's go out, let's go here, let's go there. I guess it's kind of the mental stimulation as well, because, you know, we talk about the taxation on a player's body physically, but you look at some of the players this season, for example, you know, we've mentioned Liverpool a lot through today's show. To have played every game in a season and had those emotional ups and downs of winning, losing, might not win the title, might win more trophies. You know, you need to recharge your batteries mentally as well.
100%. You have to be able to do that. And I mean, it was always a blessing for me to have young children, because it was tough and hard work. And Franny, I know this, but you can switch off because you go into their world. You know, if you go away on holiday, you're in the swimming pool all the time. You're playing games with them. You're doing things that necessarily you might not do or haven't been able to do during the season, but which does help you switch off. You know, I was never a huge drinker, especially when I was with the family. So that wasn't a way of me switching off. Maybe when you're with the lads, I'd drink more, but with the family, didn't really do that. But you do need to switch off. More for the fact that you want to be recharged and refreshed for the new season coming. The worst thing you can do is go back and you feel drained, because pre-season, believe me, like everyone knows, is tough, really, really tough, physically and mentally. So you do need to take that time, even though it can be hard, because I'm like, you know, I don't like sitting around. I just, it doesn't suit me.
Yeah. My final question was going to be about the end of season party, but do you know what? I'll leave that for another day, I reckon. Franny, Dean, appreciate your time as ever. Really enjoy having you on the show. Don't forget, if you hit subscribe, that way you won't miss an episode of this podcast again. We are the award-winning and only daily Premier League show you can find every single day of the season, and there are only a few days left. There will be a new episode for you, so you can catch us again on tomorrow's show by hitting subscribe. But my thanks to Franny and to Dean. That's it from us, and we'll speak to you next time.
The Dugout, Premier League preview, Football Social Daily.